It is my very great pleasure and fortune to be here amongst all of you this evening. I would often like to offer on behalf of all devotees our heartfelt thanks to Yash and Avanti and their family for spontaneously inviting us for this program this evening. As an expression of their great love, this is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen in my life. Do you all agree? It is like the spiritual world. In the mid-1970s, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, our beloved Guru Maharaj, came to this very house and had a wonderful program. Here he led kirtan, he gave lecture, and many wonderful things came from that. So, from this point of view, it is a very special holy place for all of us. In this world, people are struggling for happiness. The message of Bhagavad Gita teaches us what is the process of achieving true happiness. Dukalayam ashashvatam. That the sufferings of this world are due to its very nature. Everything is temporary. Our bodies are temporary. Our relationships are temporary. Whatever we can acquire within life, whether it's property, intelligence, skills, athletic abilities, wealth, it is all temporary. To the degree we derive pleasure from something, to that degree there is sorrow when it is taken away. That is why death is such a fearful thought for many, because it is the inevitable end of everything we identify with. But how can we avoid looking for happiness? Prahlad Maharaj explained, if you want to be free of all suffering, just stop trying to be happy in this world. But that's impossible. Anandamayo vyashat, our nature is to be happy. Our nature is to find pleasure. And therefore we find the common spirit amongst not only all classes of men and women, but all species of life, is everyone is searching for pleasure. So Sri Bhagavad Gita, the holy scriptures and the great souls, they have taught us since time immemorial that the origin of this great struggle for happiness is within our own hearts. The consciousness, the life force that animates and gives this body is Satchit Ananda. It is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Because its eternal nature is looking for eternal happiness, it can never find real happiness through this temporary senses mind toward temporary objects. Therefore, the greatest of all wealth is the inner wealth of realization of who we are. The ultimate happiness is the happiness of love. Who can deny it? If you have everything, but you do not have love, there can be no satisfaction to the heart. Example given. If you're the proprietor of everything in the entire planet Earth, but you're the only living being on Earth, can you be happy? We require reciprocation. We require relationship, friendship, and love. Devoid of that, everything is superficial and artificial. If one little bird comes and lands on your finger, the relationship with that bird will be more priceless than everything else. So ultimately, everyone is searching for love. But according to the particular modes of material nature we are influenced by, tamoguna, rajoguna, sattvaguna, or ignorance, passion, or goodness, we are looking for that pleasure of love in various pursuits. Some try to find pleasure through ghastly activities, through lying, through cheating, through causing harm to others. That is the mode of ignorance. Some by acquiring more and more and more and more, and various sensual pleasures. That is the mode of passion. Some try to find that happiness of the heart through performing good, pious, and philanthropic activities toward others, giving in charity, being honest, being helpful. That is the mode of goodness, sattva. But Krishna tells in Gita, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna, that the real happiness that the heart is longing for is above the modes of material nature. It is the awakening of our natural love for God. That longing for relationship finds its perfection when we realize the all-beautiful, all-loving qualities of the Absolute Truth. Vadanti tat tat vividas tatvam yajkanam advayam. Brahmiti paramatmiti bhagavan iti shabjate. Srimad Bhagavat describes that there are three essential features of the Absolute Truth. There is Brahman, the all-pervading, infinite, formless energy of the Absolute. That divine light in which everything rests, all material and spiritual worlds rest within that divine light, or Brahman. And those who pursue the path of impersonalism, or Advaita, they are seeking liberation by entering into that divine light, which is the sat feature of the Absolute Truth, or eternity. In this world, people are struggling for happiness through material ways, and there are 14 planetary systems in this world. The Earth is somewhere in the middle, but there is heavenly planets where things are so beautiful, so luxurious. Life is so long. There's so much pleasure, physical and mental. But beyond that are the planets of the rishis. Beyond Swargaloka is Mahaloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka. Those are the planets of the sages who, through tapasya and deep meditation, they find inner peace and inner happiness. But Krishna tells in Gita, Abrama Bhuvana Loka Punaravartanarjuna Mamupetya Tu Kuntiya Punarajanmana Vidyate. From the highest planet, Brahmaloka, down to the lowest, Patalaloka, they're essentially places of death. Because when the karma is exhausted, either our good karma or our bad karma, then we have to leave that position by the laws of nature. Therefore, those who are more intelligent want to free themselves from the clutches of material attachment, and they enter into Brahman, which is called mukti, liberation, where there's no birth, no death, no old age, no disease, where there's simply a pure state of existence. But the holy scriptures tell us that this is only a partial realization of the absolute truth. Brahman is the all-pervading infinite energy of the Lord. Parashya shaktir vavadaiva shruyate. There are many energies of the Lord, but wherever there is an energy, there is an energetic source. The next realization is the Paramatma. The Lord who is residing within the heart of every living being, to realize Him, to know Him, to understand our relationship. But Janmadyashayataha, the absolute truth from whom everything emanates. Krishna explains in Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, that all spiritual and all material worlds are emanating from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my loving service and worship me with all their hearts. That is Bhagavan realization, the supreme personality of Godhead. So according to a person's aspiration, one can achieve various levels of God realization. Bhagavan means understanding the all-attractive personality of Godhead. After all, we are all persons, and everything is emanating from the Absolute. Nothing can exist that does not exist in the Absolute. So if we are persons, the absolute truth must also be person. Aham bija pratapita. But not a person like us. Therefore, the Supreme Lord descends into this world in His original forms just to reveal His supreme opulences to attract our hearts back to His loving service. Thus Krishna tells, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvata tyaktva deham punara janma naiti mam eti swarjana. That one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never ever takes birth in this material world again, but attains my abode. In the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma has prayed, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. That the Supreme Lord of all Lords is Krishna. Who is Krishna? Krishna is not a sectarian name of God. Krishna means the all-attractive one, who attracts all of our heart's love. Mamayavamsaya, Jivaloke, Jivabhuta Sanatana. Brahma explains that Krishna is Satchidananda Vigraha. His form is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. He's the cause of all causes and the ultimate goal of life. And every living entity, wherever there is life, that life force is part and parcel of Krishna. This is the teachings of Gita. Mamayavam so jivaloke jivabhuta sanata. Because all living beings are a spark of Krishna, therefore every spirit soul has its attractive qualities. And we see how a person can fall in love with somebody else and become so engrossed in that affection. The love of a parent for a child, mother for child, child for mother and father. The affection between two lovers, two friends. It's so deep. Shakespeare wrote about Romeo and Juliet. They committed suicide because they couldn't tolerate living without the facility to share their love. In the Western music, I don't know so much about commercial Indian music, but in the Western music, 99% of all songs, contemporary, are about love affairs. Probably 80% about the sufferings of frustrated love. And then some songs about how nice love is. Yes? Why? Literature is written about it. Practically cinema, television. It's all about love affairs. And oftentimes very gross levels of such expressions. But the world is mad for this. Why? As soon as someone dies, then there's no attraction, there's no affection for the corpse. The affection is for the person who left the corpse. So who is that person? The difference between living body and dead body is the presence of the Atma, the Jivatma, which is part of God. And because we're infinitesimal parts of God, therefore, we can draw such attraction to ourselves or be drawn so much to the attraction of another living being. Krishna, Ram, Bhagavan is the supreme whole. Like the sun planet in which all the sun rays or sparks are emanating. What is the attraction of Krishna? It is unlimited. It is inconceivable. Therefore, Rupa Goswami explains, if you are attached to all of the misconceptions of this world, then I warn you, do not go to Keshi Ghat on bank of Jamuna in Vrindavan. Because there you will see Govinda, who is standing in the moonlight in his threefold bending forms with his beautiful lotus-like eyes, his complexion dark like a monsoon rain cloud, playing his celebrated flute, Venu. He will steal your heart. He will steal the love of your heart. It is that love everyone is searching for, longing for. Therefore, the Lord is named Bhaktivatsal. He reciprocates with such deep affection for those who have awakened their love. And the Lord appears within this world to perform such wonderful activities or leelas just to attract our hearts back to Him. Since time immemorial, the greatest, most self-realized acharyas of all sampradayas have spoken through their realization on the basis of the Holy Shastra that we should never think that the pastimes of the Lord are just some poetic literature that have been written by great souls to teach us certain moral, ethical, and spiritual lessons. That the leelas of the Lord are not mythology or imagination. They are the highest divine truth. These are personalities who possess great powers, who were so compassionate, they were willing to sacrifice their entire lives for the welfare of others, who were so deeply learned that they could defeat anyone and everyone in debates on the basis of logic, philosophy, and truth. It are these great acharyas who are teaching us about the pastimes of the Lord. They are sacred history. What is it that the Absolute Truth cannot do? In fact, today is Varaha Dwadasi. It is a very holy day. Today, the Supreme Absolute Truth appeared in the form of a boar. I hope I do not bore you. But he came in the form of a boar. Now, generally, we think boars, they're actually the most low-class form of hogs. You have seen hogs in Vrindavan and other in Bombay, you don't see so many hogs. But the places they like to go and what they like to eat is not a very attractive thing. And amongst hogs, the boar is like an outcast. Because he's just wild, living in the jungles, and very violent also. The Lord appeared in the form of a boar. What is it that the Lord cannot do? He has achinta shaktis. But the greatest sages, the greatest rishis, the most highly self-realized soul, even the devatas, the demigods in the upper worlds, they were all worshiping him and offering beautiful prayers to him. Because he came to rescue the earth. The Lord descends into this world to annihilate misconception, demoniac mentality, to protect the devotees and reestablish the truth, principles of religion. But ultimately, he comes to attract our love. The most profound, inconceivable of all subject matters is how the all-powerful, supreme controller of all controllers, Sarveshwareshwara, by his own sweet will, accept the subordinate position to the love of his devotee. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. Krishna is not in need of anything. We work because we want to acquire something. But Ishavasyam idam sarvam, he's already the proprietor of everything. What does he have to work for? But he performs his activities to share his love with his devotees. That is the origin of all love, where all love comes from. God's longing to share ecstatic love with his devotees. And whatever is offered with love, the Lord accepts with great pleasure. We know the story of Sudama Vipra in Dwarka. He was so poor. His clothes were tattered rags. His good wife, she was a very, very peaceful, contented person. But she couldn't tolerate seeing her husband living in such poverty. She said, "My dear Sudama, Krishna is your old friend. He's the husband of Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune. He's living in a beautiful empire in Dwarka. Just ask him to give you something, just to live a little comfortable in this world." She wanted it for him, and he only agreed to go for her. They were both self-satisfied, but they had such love for each other. How can I go to see Krishna without offering something? We have nothing in the house to give. So she went begging for some chipped rice. And you know that when beggars come, usually you don't give them the best thing in the house. You usually give them something that is not necessary. Broken pieces of chipped rice. He didn't even have a satchel for it. Just in his torn garments, he just tied it up and went to Dwarka. When he saw Dwarka, he was struck with wonder. The beautiful gates made of gold, silver, diamonds, emeralds, rubies, lapis lazuli, sapphires, everywhere. Beautiful palaces, 16,108 magnificent palaces. Each one superior to Indra's in the Swarga Loka. And here comes this little Brahmin in such simple torn clothes. And he was given way into the inner sanctuary of Krishna's personal residence, where he was sitting on his seat with Rukmini, his principal queen. Krishna got off of his throne and put Sudama Vipra on his seat and washed his feet. How is this? All the demigods, all the rishis, all the sages are offering hymns and praise to the Lord, and he's worshiping the feet of his devotee. That is the reciprocation of love. And Rukmini, the goddess of fortune, was fanning him with chamara, doing seva. They spent the whole day discussing the old times. When old friends come together, that's usually what they talk about, what we used to do. And they talked about the difficulties they underwent in serving their guru, Sandipani Muni, long years ago. And Krishna asked Sudama, "You brought something for me?" He said, and Sudama was looking at the opulence of Krishna's abode. And he was actually hiding that little satchel, and by that time it was also mixed with his perspiration. "Yeah, I can't give this to, you know, some pieces of cracked up chipped rice." He said, no, "I did not bring anything." "Krishna, I know you brought something. Please give me." No, "I didn't bring anything." He was keeping it hidden. So Krishna forcibly stole it and took a bite of it, put a morsel in his mouth. When he put that morsel in his mouth, he became ecstatic. He went to eat more, and Rukmini said, enough. "He has already conquered us by giving you that one morsel." You know the story. When he returned home, he was thinking, what will my wife say? I didn't even have the nerve to ask Krishna for anything. But when he returned, there was a beautiful, beautiful palace. And he and his wife live for the rest of their lives in that great opulence, in the same spirit as they were before. Everything is the property of the Lord. They live with such simplicity, humility, and devotion. Now, Krishna, how did he accept that offering? Why? Because of Sudama Vipra's love. Usually when you offer bhoga to Thakurji, there's mantra, tantra, yantra, mudra, puja, and so many other various rituals. But Sudama Vipra didn't chant any mantra, didn't perform any tantra, any yantra, any mudras. There was no puja, there was no prayers. In fact, he was trying to hide it from the Lord. But the Lord stole it from him. Because the Lord is hungry only for the love of his devotee. And the crest jewel of all stories in this regard took place in Vrindavan. Krishna was just a small child, hardly 2-3 years old. He entered into a stage, Srimad Bhagavatam explains, where he began to walk. The Absolute Truth, who gives everyone power to walk. The Upanishad says his legs are everywhere, his hands are everywhere, his eyes are everywhere. But just to exchange love with his devotees, he's Balgopal. And he's crawling. And then he gets up to walk. And his first leelas when he started to walk was to steal butter, makan chor. Now this is a very sweet and innocent story that we like to tell our children. Factually, the most learned scholars in the renounced order of life are practically daily discussing and meditating on this pastime. Satyavrat Muni is speaking with Narada Rishi in the Padma Purana, and in ecstasy of love they're describing this story. It's not just a children's story. This Leela is such a deep, profound expression of divine love. There's such... It's the conclusion of all logic, of all philosophy. And if we understand it from the proper source, in the proper spirit, just by hearing this story, ecstatic love awakens in our heart. And all the imports and purports of all the Vedas are revealed. If we just hear with faith. Krishna is makan chor. He is butter thief. But actually is a butter thief. Let us examine this narration with your permission. Krishna was running to the homes of gopis, the cowherd girls of Braj. And he would, in so many ways, with his little friends, very naughtily steal their butter and yogurts. Sometimes he would eat it, sometimes distribute to his friends, and even distribute to the monkeys. The gopis would sometimes complain about Krishna to Yashoda. But when Yashoda would keep Krishna home, the gopis would come. Where is Gopal? Where is Gopal? Why is he not coming to our house? Actually, the only reason they made butter in the first place was with the longing, the prayer, and the hope that Gopal would come to steal it. It was the reciprocation of love. Yashoda Mai would ask, what all of these people are saying, why are you doing? He said, no, I am not stealing butter. Now, some people accuse Krishna has lied. But he didn't lie. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. He's the proprietor of everything that exists. If someone comes to use what he owns or she owns, is that stealing? No. In fact, anybody who thinks anything is their own is stealing. Because everything is the property of God. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shanti mrichchati. The real formula for peace is to understand that everything is God's property and everything is ultimately meant to please God, to please Krishna. Because he's the best, most intimate, loving, well-wishing friend of all living beings. So no, Krishna's not a butter thief. Because he owns everything. But he appears. What he's really doing is he's stealing the hearts of his devotees. That is the lila of Makanchor. Stealing the hearts of his devotees. As he stole the chipped rice from Sudama, he's stealing the gopis' hearts by accepting their offerings in this most beautiful and exciting pastime. So one day, actually on Deepavali, very holy day, in Bombay, so many firecrackers are... On the day of Diwali, Yashoda Mai rose very early in the morning. The reason was because she is in the relationship of Krishna's mother. How can anyone be the mother of the Supreme Mother and Father of all living beings? For the sake of loving relationship, Krishna accepts Yashoda as mother, to give the chance to express the deepest love. Even in this world, which is higher? The love of a servant for a master, or the love of friend and friend? And deeper than that is the love of between a mother and a child. And then there is the love between lover and beloved. So just to facilitate the most intimate, pleasing pastimes of love, the Lord accepts Yashoda as mother. And she is thinking that my little Gopal, she has already realized the supremacy of the Absolute, but she has gone beyond that into intimate service to the Absolute. So Yashoda Mai is thinking that Krishna's going to so many other houses to steal butter. Perhaps he's not satisfied with butter in my house. So to please Krishna, such efforts. First of all, she grew this grass, Padmaganda grass, which was so fragrant to smell, sweet to taste. It was so soft that it just was so pleasing to the cows that ate it. And any cow that ate this Padmaganda grass, which had the fragrance of lotus flowers, would give Padmaganda milk. She only had about 8 cows. cows that were this out of 100,000 cows in Nanda Maharaj's herd, 8 of them were fed this Padmaganda grass. So Yashoda herself went out. She was thinking, I'm having so many maidservants milking the cows and making butter. Today, with all the love of my heart, I will do it. So she personally milked the Padmaganda cows with Padmaganda milk. Harivo! She made it into yogurt, dahi, and she was churning, thinking then Krishna will be satisfied. As she was churning, she was singing the glories of Krishna. This is the nature of love. Throughout history, even in this world, people have written songs and poetry about the object of their love. So in Vrindavan, every day, whatever Krishna's activities, whatever pastimes he performed, they would sing beautiful songs to always remember Krishna. According to Kapila Dev, who is the founder of the Sankhya philosophy. Now let us examine this. This is very interesting. Sankhya philosophy is the most analytical investigation of all the various levels of material existence, creation, sustenance, destruction, birth, death, karma. It describes from the atomic particle to the universal forms the nature of this world, the nature of the mind, the intelligence, the ego, and ultimately the nature of the soul and God. Now this Lord Kapiladev, in his description to Devahuti about the Sankhya philosophy, he sums it up that the two injunctions within the scriptures by which all other philosophy, all other logic, all other instructions are subordinate to and ultimately to fulfill are these two instructions: to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. And since time immemorial, the easiest way to always remember Krishna is to chant the glories and the names of the Lord. Namachintamani Krishna Chaitanya Ras Vigraha. The Lord is none different than the name of the Lord. Nam namakari bahuta nija sarva shaktis tatrapita niyamita smarane nakala. This means, my dear Lord, you have invested all your powers, all of your potencies, all of your opulences, all of your grace, your mercy within your name. The name of the Lord is none different than the Lord. Kali Kale Namarupe Krishnavatar. The Lord descends into this world in the form of the name. Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. The name of God is not just material words. They are not mystic supernatural vibrations. The name of the Lord is the incarnation of the Lord that has descended from the highest stratum of the spiritual sky, Goloka. Therefore, we can always be with Krishna by chanting his glories and by chanting his holy names. And because Krishna is all pure, Om Pavitra Pavitro Vas, when we associate with the name of the Lord, we become purified. The mind is like a mirror, covered with the dust of material conceptions and misconceptions. But there is no more powerful way of cleaning that, cleaning the misconceptions from our heart, than associating with the Lord through the name. Therefore, Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. In this age of Kali, there is no better way of awakening our original, natural, spiritual love than the chanting of God's names. Sripad Madhvacharya, when he was preaching in South India, he was amongst some people who just were not listening to his subject. So he said, "Give me some seeds." So they gave him some seeds for a plant, and he put them in the palm of his hand, and he started singing with such devotion the holy names of the Lord, and the seeds just grew into plants right out of the palm of his hand. Thousands of people witnessed this. He wanted to show this is the power of the holy name. Now our spiritual consciousness is like little seeds just somewhere hidden in our heart. But the name of the Lord, it's like that mystical nourishment that waters those seeds and make them grow into the flower of pure, eternal, spiritual love. One time, our Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, was asked, "What do you hope to get out of chanting the holy names?" Now, most people will say, "We want to get mukti." But Srila Prabhupada said, "What we want to get out of chanting of the holy names is eternal chanting of the holy names." And here is the evidence. Yashoda Mai, she's a perfectly liberated soul. She's descended from the spiritual world. She's Krishna's mother. She's feeding Krishna the milk from her breast. What a perfected being. But she's constantly chanting out of love, in her perfectional state of consciousness, the holy names.
Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Hare,
Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Lalita Sakhi Mataji Harivo. So as she was chanting, her bangles were moving as she was churning the butter, and they were keeping time. And she was singing with such love. Milk was flowing from her breast due to motherly affection. And the malati flowers that were decorating her hair began to think, "What right do we have to be on her head? Her love is so deep. We should fall to her lotus feet." So it appeared that they were falling, but actually they were jumping out of her hair to take shelter of her lotus feet. Because she was chanting so sincerely with such love, and the milk was flowing out of her motherly affection, Krishna woke up and he felt hungry. Now, why would God feel hungry? Atmaram. Those who are self-realized souls are called Atmarama. Atmarama means somebody who's self-satisfied. They really do not need anything. Krishna is supremely Atmarama. He doesn't need anything, but he becomes hungry for the love of his devotee, so that reciprocation could be there. So little Gopal got up from his bed and he ran to where Yashoda Mai was churning the butter, and he put his hand on the churning rod and looked at his mother, that now I am here. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Abandon all varieties of activities and I want to drink the milk of your love. So he pulled her sari and climbed up on her lap, and she very pleasingly began to feed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of Brahman, the source of Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, the source of all living entities. She's feeding him the milk of her love. And Krishna's face was so beautiful, like a full moon, surrounded by his curling hair, which was black like the feathers of a crow, his beautiful lotus-like eyes. In the kitchen, there was Padmaganda milk on the stove. Due to the heat of the fire, it began to boil over. The milk was thinking, because in the spiritual world, everything is conscious. The milk was thinking, I'm only here because I want to be drunk by Krishna. Yashodamai's love is unlimited. And therefore Krishna will drink it unlimitedly. There is no need for me. So the milk boiled over and jumped into the fire. So Yashodamai went running to protect that milk because that milk was for Krishna. When she left Krishna, Krishna became apparently angry. He bit his lip with his teeth to show the world that the only way to overcome the redness of anger is by the mode of goodness, which is white. And then he decided to perform a wonderful, wonderful pastime to attract all people's hearts for all time to come. He took the grinding stone for spice grinding and broke the pot of butter. Then he ran into another room. Yashodamai came back and saw, there's the butter pot she was churning. It's broken. She knew exactly who had done what. Where is my Gopal? Where is he? She was looking in all directions. And then she saw tiny little yogurt footprints. The footprints because the butter got all over Krishna's lotus feet. So Yashodamai began to follow those butter footprints. They brought her to another room where she saw that Gopal had turned a grinding mortar upside down and he was sitting, and from ropes hanging from rafters were holding a pot of butter. Krishna was reaching up into that butter pot and feeding the monkeys of Vrindavan. Krishna revealed why he was feeding the monkeys. Because in his previous incarnation, he told his mother later on, I will fast forward and then come back. Later on, when his mother asked, why were you feeding monkeys? He said, Mata, in my previous incarnation as Lord Ram, these monkeys did so much for me. They built that whole bridge from Rameshwaram to Sri Lanka. And in searching for Sita, sometimes they were starving. They had no food. They had no water even. They struggled and performed such tapasya for me. And because in those days I was living in the forest in exile from Ayodhya, I had nothing to give them. But I am so much indebted to them that I have called them back now to feed them this fresh Brajbhumi butter with my own hands to satisfy all their desires. So this was the mood of the Lord as he was feeding the butter. to the monkeys. Yashoda Mai picked up a stick and very, very quietly walked behind Gopal. The monkeys saw her and they jumped through the windows and through the doors in escape. And Gopal saw his monkeys going away, and then he looked and there was Yashoda behind him. He jumped off the grinding mortar and fled. As he ran, she ran behind him. He was running and she was running and he was running and she was running. Now who can catch the absolute truth? Who is faster than the fastest? Yashoda Mai, as she was running, it is explained, the malati flowers that remained within her hair, they were jumping off to the ground. It appeared they were falling off because she was running so fast, but actually they were jumping off because she wanted to capture Krishna and punish Krishna, and they did not want to be part of that conspiracy. And others were actually on Yashoda Mai's side. They jumped off because they were thinking that they were putting excess weight on her and making it more difficult for her to run fast. So they jumped off to free her from that weight. As Krishna was running, who can catch Gopal? Yashoda Mai was running and running and running, but she could not reach him. But then she saw the very soft, tender soles of his reddish lotus feet. And her heart just overflowed with love. What if those feet trample as he's running away? What if they trample on a pebble or a stone or a thorn? How much that will cause him suffering. In that motherly love, her heart was overflowing. And Krishna, knowing the heart of his devotee, couldn't run any further. He agreed by his own will to be captured by the love of Yashoda. Gopal Satyavrat Muni describes in Padma Purana, Damodarastakam, how Gopal's full-bloomed lotus-like eyes were weeping incessant tears. And with his beautiful lotus-like palms, he was rubbing them. And the kajal, the black mascara, was mixing with the tears and making a beautiful, beautiful ornamented decoration streaming down his face and his whole body. His limbs were trembling. His little chest was going back and forth because he was breathing so quickly. And he was crying out, Mata, Mata! Please, put down that stick. So she threw the stick. And then she asked, why? Why are you doing such mischief? Because you're associating with monkeys, you become like a monkey. Said Mata, I confess, I did it. I stole the butter, but I promise you, I will never do it again. Please do not hurt me. Do not punish me, please. Now the great Kunti Devi, the mother of Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadev, and Karna as well. Kunti Devi, in her prayers to Lord Sri Krishna, she's remembering this scene. How fascinating, how wonderful that fear personified fears the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna demonstrated in the Virat Rupa that he is almighty time. And in that universal form, Virat Rupa, Even the greatest heroes and warriors were being devoured by his form as time. Yes, time devours everything and everyone. At every moment, we are all being devoured by time. Time and tide waits for no one. So yes, fear personified is fearful of the Supreme. But the Supreme Lord is afraid of Yashoda, who's just a simple gopi. That is the power of her love. So Krishna is admitting, actually, Krishna's friends, the gopas, were at a little distance away because they were afraid to come too close to Yashoda because she was apparently angry in her love. A mother's love sometimes manifests as anger. Usually children cannot understand that. I remember when I was a little boy, my father, when he wanted to do some little punishment to me, it was always very little things. He said, "This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you." And I'd say, "What? This is nonsense. It's not going to hurt you. It's only going to hurt me." But later on, I realized actually it did hurt him more than hurt me. That's the nature of love. So Krishna looked at his gopas, Madhu Mangal, Sridhama, Subala, Stoka Krishna, and he'd look at them and smile and laugh. And they smiled and laughed. Then he'd look at Yashoda and he'd start crying. "Please don't hurt me, please don't hurt me." Then he'd look at his friends and smile and laugh. Then he'd look back at Yashoda and, "Please, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again, I'm sorry." Then he'd look at his... But Yashoda Mai was thinking, "I have so many household chores to do, and Krishna's breakfast must be made. So how to keep this mischievous child out of trouble?" She decided to bind him to the grinding mortar with rope, with the same rope that was used to bind calves. For those of you who know about milking cows, sometimes you tie the calf, you let the calf drink the cow's milk to its satisfaction, then you take it away and tie it so that the rest of the milk can be used for everyone else. So with the same rope that was used to tie little calves, Yashoda Mai was going to tie Krishna. But Bhagavan, nothing is outside of Krishna. According to the Upanishads, nothing is inside. Everything is within the Absolute Truth. Nothing can be outside of the Absolute Truth. So how can you tie a rope outside of his body? It's philosophically inconsistent. So she took that rope, and it was two fingers too short. She tied more rope. Went to tie that. It was two fingers too short. Went to tie more. Two fingers more. Every time she put more and more and more rope, it was two fingers too short. The gopis, they were watching. This was incredible. This was wonderful. They wanted to participate in this leela. So gopis started bringing all the ropes from all around the different houses of Vrindavan. And they were just smiling and laughing and just giving Yashoda Mai more and more and more and more rope. The rope was... Lord knows how long, but it was still two fingers too short. Now, what is the great miracle of this? That although the rope was becoming kilometers long, Krishna did not grow. As Vamanadeva, when he had to go the two steps to cover the universe, he became Trivikram, very, very big size. But Krishna doesn't have to become big to become big. He could remain smaller than the smallest and be bigger than the biggest. Does that make sense to material intelligence? No! But if the Lord, if the absolute truth is going to be boxed up in your limited conceptions of what's possible, then why should he be the Lord? He is a chintya shakti, inconceivable potencies. So yes, he remained the same size. The ropes were getting longer and longer, and every time it was two fingers too short. But when Gopal saw that Yashoda Mai, with such parental, motherly affection, was simply trying to protect him out of her love, he agreed to be bound by Yashoda Mai. Yashoda means one who brings fame. Not only did Yashoda give fame to Vrindavan, but she gave eternal fame even to Krishna. By the devotional efforts of Yashoda, Krishna is forever worshipped as Damodar, one who was bound around the waist by the love of his mother. This is the power of bhakti. It is the greatest of all powers, because the Lord becomes a prisoner in the heart of his loving devotee. The Lord becomes subordinate to the love of his devotee. If you want mystic powers, muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayam, if you want mystic powers, the Lord will give you siddhis. When we were living in Himalayas many years ago, 34 years ago, we saw many siddhas. People who could do extraordinary things that are considered miracles by common people. Producing gold, producing ashes, levitating, reading people's minds, controlling people's intelligence. People who could just lay in fire. People who could actually acquire things just by chanting of mantras. Yes, there are many such people. But that state does not bring real peace of mind. It does not give real inner satisfaction. It's just a scientific process of manipulating material energy from the subtle platform. The more subtle you learn how to control matter, the more you can actually extract power from matter. Today's world, people's consciousness has become very gross. So someone who has a few little cities is considered something very great. So God, the Lord, is not very reserved about giving siddhis to people who perform tapasya. And he'll even give liberation into his eternal effulgence to those who perform the proper tapasya and jnana. But when he gives bhakti, when he gives love, he becomes the property. He becomes purchased. He becomes subordinate to that love. So therefore, it is the greatest of all treasures. It is the purushartha siromani, the crest jewel of all goals of life, is prema, pure, unalloyed spiritual love. It is the essence of ecstasy. So Yashoda Mai, she bound Krishna by her love. And it is ultimately that love that Krishna discusses in Bhagavad Gita that is the only way to know him perfectly. He reveals himself according to our love, our prema. This is what life is really about. Purifying the heart and awakening that transcendental state of love within us. And how to do so? It is actually very simple. Although the philosophy behind it is incredibly erudite, with volumes and volumes of books describing in systematic detail how everything within creation is working and how the spirit soul awakens to its normal state of spiritual consciousness. But the same goal is available to simple people, even to children. What's really required is sincerity. Sincerity of our purpose. Because the Lord is bhavagrahi. He accepts the purpose in which everything is offered. Yat karoshi rashnasi yaj johosi tatasyat yat tapasyasi kontiya tat karushu madarpuna. All that you eat, all that you do, all that you offer and give away, make it an offering of affection to me. So to live our life in harmony with this principle is a beautiful life. According to Gita, it is the art of living in harmony with the highest truth. Whether one is a warrior like Arjuna, or a mother like Kunti, whether one is a simple poor Brahmin like Sudama, or whether one is a royal king like Bahulaswa, or like Yudhisthira later on in his life, whether one is a great, great scholar like Madhvacharya, or whether one is a simple lady just cleaning the pots at home. If our purpose of life is to purify our heart and express our devotion to the Absolute, we will attain the same destination. And to awaken that consciousness, there are several principles that are very important. One is to live a very moral, ethical life. No eating of meat, fish, eggs, which is basic respect and compassion to other living beings. To cultivate humility, to cultivate simplicity. To give up intoxications, gambling, illicit relationships. That puts us in the mode of goodness. From the mode of goodness, we can transcend the modes of nature by associating with holy people. Whether a person is a businessman or an engineer or a housewife or a student or a farmer or a doctor or a lawyer, doesn't matter. You don't have to change your position in society. We just have to change our consciousness. From a consciousness of exploitation to a consciousness of humility and service. If we associate with such people who hold these aspirations as sacred, we become purified. And in that association, we hear about the Lord. We hear the philosophy of life. And with great faith and determination, we can purify our hearts through this simple gift, this simple, precious gift of chanting the holy names. I thank you very much. And once again, Yash Avanti, Sloka Vedanta in Nirvana, thank you for allowing us to come to this most beautiful garden, this very holy place. Would you like to have kirtan at this time? As I'm chanting, everyone with folded hands, welcome Krishna in his name into your heart with great attention. And as you are chanting, please raise your arms very high, like this. Like Draupadi, you know the story. In the court of the Kurus, Draupadi was going to be stripped naked of her sari. Now that is worse than death for a chaste woman, to be derobed in the presence of many men. So she looked to her husbands, she looked to Bhishma, she looked to Dhritarashtra, but none of them could help her. Then she tried with all of her might to hold on. But she was no match to Dushasana, whose arms were like 10,000 elephants. So when everything was hopeless and helpless, she threw her arms in the air in a spirit of surrender and loudly cried out, "Hey Krishna, hey Govinda." And because she chanted in such a spirit of helpless devotion, Krishna reciprocated. He incarnated within her sari, and because he is unlimited, her sari became unlimited. Dushasana pulled and pulled and pulled and pulled, and it was coming off, but she was fully dressed. So yes, ultimately we are helpless. The power of karma, the power of time, the power of material nature, whoever we may be, can vanquish us at any moment. So let us very sincerely, very honestly and earnestly raise our arms and loudly cry out in the spirit of Draupadi the holy names of the Lord. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita that as you approach me, I reciprocate accordingly. According to the sincerity and the feeling, based on proper knowledge, that we approach the Lord reveals himself. So everyone, please stand and let us take shelter of the holy name.